in the end of Parshas Miket, in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, we see the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef, and in the Haftorah, this is the Novi Yecheskel describes this confrontation as an ongoing split in Klal Yisrael, the confrontation, and the Parsha represents an ongoing split in Klal Yisrael. They were divided into two mamlochas. There was Yosef on the one hand, and there was Yehuda on the other hand. And the Navi says that, believe it or not, as hard as it is to believe, the day will come that there will be unity in Klal Yisrael, that there will be Achdus. And the Navi is told not just to deliver a nevuah, but to do a poel dimyon. He's told that he should act out in pantomime a whole story. He should take two branches of wood, kachlocha, and then he should hold the two pieces of wood together. And when people will ask you, what is it supposed to represent? This represents, believe it or not, that the day will come that there will be Achdus among Bnei Yisrael, and at that time the Beis HaMikdash will be built and it will not be destroyed again. The source of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is the fact that there was Machloikis among Klal Yisrael. And Lossi Lovoi, the Navi says Benevuah, and he acts out the Poel Dimyon. And Ban HaChumash explains that whenever you have a Nevuah with a Poel Dimyon, it's Mechazik the Nevuah. It's considered a strong Nevuah. Sometimes a Nevuah is conditional, but a Nevuah with a Poel Dimyon is assumed to be an absolute Nevuah, that this will definitely take place. No strings attached. So the day will come that the Bnei Yisrael will be in a state of Achdus, and at that time the Beis HaMikdash will be built and it will last forever. That's how the Haftarah concludes, and it says it a few times in this Haftarah. The Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt and it will be of a lasting nature. Rashi in his commentary on today's Sedra quotes that when Yosef finally meets up with Binyamin, that was his full brother, the others were only half brothers, but Yami was the full brother. So they were crying on each other's shoulders. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, crying on each other's shoulders means they're crying over the Churbanus of the Batim Mikdoshes, over the Mishkan Shiloh, and over the Bayis Rishon, over the Bayis Sheni. Why is this the occasion all of a sudden to cry over the Churbanus of the Batim Mikdoshes? So the Medrash understands, based on this Haftarah in Yecheskel, the Nevuah in Yecheskel, that's this week's Haftarah, that the Churban Beis HaMikdash is because of the Pirud in Klal Yisrael. And the day will come that there will no longer be any Pirud. The Gemara alludes to the fact that there's going to be two Mashiachim. Well, we always know about Mashiach ben David. The Gemara in one place in Sukkah alludes to the fact that it's going to be prior to the coming of Mashiach ben David, there's going to be a Mashiach ben Yosef. That this This split between Yosef and Yehuda is not only representative of a split in Klal Yisrael, that they were separated from each other, it represents also two different forms of leadership. That there's a leader who's called the Mashiach ben Yosef, and another leader who's known as Mashiach ben David. The Gemara only mentions it in one place, in the end of Sukkot. Apparently in the Zohar it's mentioned more often than once. There is a sefer that was printed years ago, before 1948, that's called Kol HaTor. It was supposedly written by a student of the Gra, quoting all the things from the Vilna Gaon about Mashiach ben Yosef. And Yosef Begimatria is 156. So this sefer has 156 chidushim, little paragraphs. Each paragraph, one or two lines, or five lines, 10 lines, not so long. 156 chidushim in the area of Mashiach ben Yosef. And the Vilna Gaon supposedly is quoted in the Sefer as having said that this was his greatest area of Chiddush in the area of Mashiach and Yosef, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu only brought him into the world to be Mechadish this, it would have been worth it for that alone. The Sefer was reprinted by Rabbi Mendel Kasha years later, after HaKomas HaMedina, after 1948, in the middle of his big fat book, HaTzkufa HaGdolah, so he reprinted this whole book. So people were claiming that Rabbi Kasha forged the whole book. That's certainly not true. He didn't forge the book. There are original copies of the book in its first printing, which he didn't put out. Someone else put out. It could be that the whole book is a forgery, but he's the Rabbi Mendel Kasher is not the one who forged it. If it's a forgery, it was forged by someone else. There were Talmidei Hagra who lived in Yerushalayim for years, and this sefer, this Kol HaTor, which was attributed to one of the students of the Gra, was always a questionable sefer. They wrote about it for years, for over 100 years. They were writing that they weren't sure whether the fellow who had the sefer doctored it up, and maybe the whole thing is false, maybe the whole thing is true. They were never too sure about this sefer. So he has in that sefer, he has one of the 156 in Yonim of Mashiach ben Yosef. He comments on the pasuk Vayake Yosef Esecha Vehem Lahi Kiruhu in last week's Sedra. He says that this represents the idea that when the day will come that there will be a Mashiach ben Yosef prior to Mashiach ben David, so Bnei Yisrael will not even realize at the time that this is going on that this is the Tkufa Mashiach ben Yosef. It will only be ascertained later. Like Yosef reveals himself to the brothers in Parshas Vayigash, Parshas Miketz, he recognizes them, but they don't realize that that's their brother. So the same will be true regarding the period of Mashiach ben Yosef, which will precede the period of Mashiach ben David. The Jewish people at that time will not realize that they're going through this Tkufa. He quotes somebody, a lot of strange things there. The name of the Vilna Gaon, quotes the Vilna Gaon, said he thought that he was Mashiach ben Yosef. What is it? What is it supposed to represent? What is Mashiach ben Yosef supposed to represent? It's very unclear. Okay. So we'll hope we'll be around to see what's going on. The Parsha begins, Parsha Zayigash begins with Yosef. Yosef wants to keep Binyamin as a slave, and Yehuda argues with him that he says, I'm prepared to stay. I'm stronger than my brother Binyamin, and he says he wants to stay instead of him, and he has to explain, why am I the brother who's so involved in this case? The reason why I'm tumbling so much as opposed to the other brothers, because the father didn't want to let Binyamin go to Mitzrayim. He was afraid that he would get killed, and I was the one who promised the father I'm going to see to it that he comes back. And Rashi quotes from the Medrash, Avdecho Arabis Anar, that in last week's Sedra, Yehuda tells the father, if I don't bring Binyamin back alive, Chatosi Liyovi Kol HaYomim. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, the expression appears in the Yalkut Shemini, Chatosi Liyovi Kol HaYomim, Kol is Lerabis Lerelem Abo. Like it says in the Haggadah, quoting the Mishnah in Brachas, Mantis kasem tzeis chamir tzaim kol yemei chayecha. So it says yemei chayecha oel amazeh kol yemei chayecha lehovi limos ha-mashiach. Kol is a ribuy. So here also Yehuda says to the father, the chatos of Yehovi kol ha-yamim, he accepted upon himself a nidui bo'el amazeh bo'el amabo. That's the expression that Rashi quotes from the Yalkut Shemoini. The chatos of Yehovi kol ha-yamim, kol is marba oel amabo, in addition to oel amazeh. So he was mekabel a nidui bo'el amazeh bo'el amabo. So the Tashbeitz in the Shailas Atshuvas asks Akasha and Rashi, how can that be? He thinks that the essence of Nidui is that people are misrachic from the individual, that they don't sit Tech Dalar HaMoisav. So how can that be that Yehuda was Mekabel HaNidui Bo'elam HaZeh and Bo'elam HaBo? So how do the brothers all sit together? How does everybody sit together? And Yehuda approaches, he had accepted a Nidui. So Yehuda approaches all of the other brothers. Yehuda's in violation of the Nidui. The brothers are in violation of the Nidui. So the Tashbeit says that he thinks that this Rashi is a Pella, that that's not what it says. He's right. And the Medrash Rabbah doesn't say the expression that Rashi wrote. But Yosef Engel points out, though, that it says it in the Yalkut Shemoni. Rashi is quoting directly from the Yalkut Shemoni. So the Tashbeit thinks that the Medrash Rabbah says that he only accepted a Nidui Bo'elam Abba. He never accepted a Nidui Bo'elam Azeh. The Chatos Eliyavi Kol HaYamim only refers to that time, namely Olam Abba, where there are no nights. There are only days, there are only nights. And he quotes Midrashim to that extent, that Olam Abba is described as a time where there's no nighttime, there's only daytime.
The Nidui was conditional. It only should have taken effect if you didn't bring back the Yamim.
Yeah.
No conscious at all.
Yeah, well, the Gemara says that a nidoy al tanai also tzarech hafara. Even if one accepts a nidoy on a condition, even if the condition will not be fulfilled, the nidoy is chal, because he did bring back Binyamin. The Gemara says in Makis, in the second perek, that Atzmoisel shal Yehuda hayu mugugolim ba'oron, and they were bringing back Arona shal Yosef to Eretz Yisrael. In addition to Arona shal Yosef, he said, Yosef said, "V'halisim es atzmaisam izeh itchem." Itchem means that the other shvatim were also brought back there, so they had all died. They were in Golus Mitzrayim for over 200 years. They were there for 210 years. Kiminyan redu. So all the shvatim died. So the Medrash assumes, "V'halisim es atzmaisam izeh itchem." The bones of all of the shvatim were brought back. So the Gemara has this Medrash, and Rashi HaFumish quotes it, that the bones of Yehuda were rolling around in the Aram because his nidui had taken effect. But he did bring Binyamin back. So the Gemara says, we learn out from this tradition that we have that the nidui is chal, even if it's ala tanai. And there's a bit la tanai, the nidui is chal. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to be mata the nidui. When Moshe Rabbeinu praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, that's when he was mata the nidui. So the Tashbi says, Takasha, why weren't they matzah the nidui earlier? When it turned out that Binyamin was alive. He brought back Binyamin to the father. So true, the nidui al-tanai is chal. So they should have been matzah the nidui at that time. Why'd they have to wait till years later? So he claims, the Tashbi says, because I'm right and Rashi's wrong. Because the nidui didn't take effect by Olam Hazeh. Nidui only took effect by Olam Habo. That's only after he died. The Gemara says he can't be mater and neder before it's chal. So he assumes Adinami, you can't be mater and nidui before the nidui is chal. So the nidui was only after death. Nidui was only relevant after death. So they couldn't be mater the nidui till after Yehuda died. So still a kasha. Why do we wait till the days of Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay. So at least the answer is half of the kasha. Why weren't they mater the nidui right away? When the whole story was all over, Yankee Ravino, all the brothers, they should have been mater the nidui. So he says, no, it wasn't yet Higia Hazman to be mater the nidui. This is what he claims. I don't know, the Pashtus is the Tashbeitzin presenting his kasha. Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes this Tashbeitz. Tashbeitzin presenting the kasha writes an expression that's the whole essence of a nidui is to be misrachik dalat amos from the person. And he quotes Gemara in the Dorim that if a person takes a neder menuda niloch, so what he means is that he won't stand toch dalat amos. So you see that's the essence of the concept of a nidui. The Pashtus, the way the Netziv writes in his commentary on the Shulchan, Pashtus is not like that. The Netziv assumes that the essence of a nidui is a curse, that the person should drop dead. And that's exactly why a nidui al tanai tzorech haTorah. Because a brocha and a klola is not up to a person to make a brocha and a klola. Like a chalitza. You can't make chalitza al tanai. If you make chalitza al tanai, let's say the Yovam agrees to do chalitza, and he says, I'm only doing the chalitza on the condition that you pay me $100,000 in the next month. If you don't pay the money, the chalitza should not be mata you. So the Gemara says in Yevamos that the chalitza is good, even though she doesn't pay a penny. The chalitza remains good. By gittin, by kiddushin, we need das adam, so you can express das ala tanai. Chalitza doesn't really need das. Chalitza, you have to know what you're doing. If the person doesn't realize that this is Yevam, and he doesn't realize that he's performing chalitza, then the Gemara says it's no good. The chalitza is only mata the isha lashuka she is kavin hu vachit is kavin he. You have to have kavana shem. Once you have that they're both having kavana l'shem chalitza that's mata lashuk, then you don't need das. He's not the yovam is not a bailam, is not a balabas. I'm a balabas to sell my house. I'm a balabas to decide if I want to get married, if I want to get divorced, if I want to accept a neder. So that's why it's possible to take a neder ala tanai, to sell ala tanai, to make a tanai, make a chamemkar, to make a tanai in hafrashas truma. You can make a tanai and all these things. But chalitza, the Torah says, you have to perform this mitzvah. Once you perform the mitzvah, the woman is mutaris lehinasi lashuk. So what do you mean? You're doing it ala tanai. It's not a matter that you're a bailam to determine that you want to make a tanai. So the same is true regarding a broch and a klala. Let's say Yaakov Avinu fooled his father Yitzchak into giving him the broch. The father, at the time he gave the broch, thought that he was Esav. So how did the broch take effect? A tois is mevatel la maisa hodam and kol atarakula. So the answer is, a tois can't be mevatel la bracha because Yitzchok Avinu is not the one who gives out the brachas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the brachas. Vitel nechahu elakim. Well, every bracha, every klala, every bracha is Kodesh Baruch Hu bless you, and the klala is the same thing. If a person just says, I curse you, why is that a klala? Klala has to be b'shem Hashem. You have to curse in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God should curse, God should punish the person. So the one who says the bracha, the klala, he's just saying, I'm Isa bracha and I'm Isa klala. He's not the bailim over the chaloisa bracha the haklala. He's not the balabos. That's how the Rambam writes in Hilchas Tfilah, when he has all the laws of Nesias Kapayim. So he says, if the kohen who wants the duchen is a ratzeach, or the kohen who wants the duchen is an eved avodah zarah, then we don't allow that. But what if he runs around with other women, and what if he drinks, and what if he gamvis, and what if he does cold over also? Okay, he's on drugs, he violates other avodah. So the Rambam says he does duchen. So then the Rambam poses the question of what value is his bracha? I'm a tzaddik, and this kohen is a rasha, and he's going to give me a bracha. I should give him a bracha. Who is he, a balabas, to give a bracha? So the Rambam says he's not a balabas at all. The Samash Mil Bnei Yisrael Vaniya Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives the bracha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who gives the klolas. So that's why apparently a klola ala tanai, a bracha ala tanai, or a bracha bitois, or a klola ala tanai, klola bitois is going to be chal anyway. If the Rebbeinu Shalom will decide to cause it to take effect. Let's say a person gives a klola. So maybe the Rebbeinu Shlomo decide not to give the klola. But if the fellow is worthy of a klola, the fellow is worthy, the recipient of the blessing or the curse is worthy of that bracha, that klola, then the fact that the one who recited the bracha, the klola, made a mistake, it was betoy, so the tanai is irrelevant. He just recites the pasuk, or he just recites the maisa bracha, maisa klola, and the toys is not mevapel. So apparently that's over here also the same thing. The Gemara assumes that the essence of the nidui is the curse that the fellow should die. The Netziv points out that the fact that you're misrachik dalaram is that's the icing on top of the cake. If they want to, they can choose to add that on. Not like the Tashbait says, that's the essence, he writes, that's the essence of the nidui. So the Netziv writes the opposite. That's not at all the essence of the nidui. That's a dova nosaf ala nidui. The essence of the nidui really is a curse that the person should die. Anyway, that's an interesting comment. Yosef Engel points out that this lashon Rashi Yashin Kibal Alatzman Nidoi B'Shnei Olam is Boelam Azeh Boelam Abba. That's a direct quotation from the Yalkut Shemoni on Chumash. The Gemara in the end of Bava Basra discusses the institution of Orvus. There is a din of Orev, a co-signer. If a loiva borrows money from the malva, and someone says, if the loiva doesn't pay, I'll pay in his stead. So that's the institution of Orev. So we paskin, there is a discussion in the Mishnah, we paskin the Orev is mukhayif to pay. Orev of a ksuba is not mukhayif to pay. If a girl agrees to get married and the chassan gives her a ksuba, and then the girl is wondering, maybe the chassan will not have enough money to pay in the event that he's going to divorce her. So another fellow says, don't worry, in case he divorces you and he doesn't pay, I'll pay in his stead. So the Gemara says, an orav of a ksuba is loy mishtabe. Because that's self-understood that he was only egging the girl on that she should marry the boy. That he didn't really mean to accept upon himself the hischai. So that's the discussion that the Gemara has regarding every orav. Why is any orav ever obligated to pay? He's just encouraging the malve to give the loan to the loiva. And he says, and don't worry, the loiva is a reliable fellow, he'll pay up the money, and even if it'll turn out that he doesn't pay, don't worry, I'll pay. But he probably never really had in mind that he's going to pay. So that's the Gemara asked the Kashi, isn't this asmachta? Shouldn't I say that asmachta lo kanya? Asmachta means whenever you have a Rashi's definition of asmachta. The Rambam has a different definition, but Rashi's simple definition of asmachta is whenever you have a maisa ala tanai, where there's an umdara de muchach that the person thought that it'll never come li dei kiyum atanai. They're so madly in love with each other, so they get, let's say, a couple gets engaged and they write to Noim. So they're so madly in love with each other, they thought they're never going to back out from this agreement. So then, they write, what are they writing to Noim? That in case the husband backs out, he's going to pay a penalty to the kala. In case the kala backs out, she'll pay a penalty to the chosn. Then somebody backs out later on from the tenoim, from the engagement. So that's what all the Rishonim ask a kasha. The Rambam poses the kasha, and Tosfos poses the kasha, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Apparently, this was such a widespread practice by the Ashkenazim and by the Sephardim. When a couple would get engaged, they would make tenoim. They would agree to these penalties in case anybody backs out from the shidduch. So they all All the Rishonim work on this kasha. Why not call this asmachta? It was a hischayvus al atanai, where there was an umdan in the muhav that the kiyam atanai will never take place. So shouldn't. So there's a machlokes of Yosi Reb Yehuda, where they say asmachta kanya, asmachta lo kanya. We pass an asmachta lo kanya like Reb Yosi. What does it mean? An umdan in the muhav that the kiyam atanai will never take place is taken as the equivalent of an umdan in the muhav that I'm not mischayv myself. I obligate myself to give you a gift of $1 million in case the cow will jump over the moon. There was the cow ever going to jump over the moon? So me, I never obligate myself. I make a hischayvus ala tanai, and a tanai so far fetched, ridiculous, never going to happen. So if I obligate myself to pay you a penalty in case I back out from the shidduch, who's backing out from the shidduch? They're crazy, lovey dovey with each other. They're madly in love with each other. So that each one thought they're never going to back out from the shidduch. So that's why they obligated. So an umdir in the muchach that there never will be a kiyam atanai is the equivalent to an umdir muchach that the person never agreed to it. So that's the same kasha over here. By every case of orei, that's the topic the Gemara discusses in the end of Bava Basra. How do you know that an orev is mishtabit? Why not consider every orev the ksuba we talk to say is asmachta lo kanya? Orev the ksuba is la mishtabit. Because we say that the fellow was just encouraging the girl, she shouldn't worry. Everyone is nervous when they're about to get married, when they're about to get engaged. Everybody gets cold feet the last minute. So the girl, the boy, this friend of the chassan, was encouraging the girl, she should agree to marry the chassan. Don't worry, if the chassan divorces you, or if he dies, and you'll be concerned about collecting the ksuba, I'll make good, I'll be the orif. So the Gemara says he didn't really mean that. It's self-understood, he thought that they're going to have a happy marriage, they're not going to get divorced, there won't be any problems in the marriage. He didn't really mean to accept upon himself the hischaibus of an orif. But a regular orif, not in the case of a ksuba, is mishtabe. So that's what the Gemara asked the kasha. Why not consider that also asmachta lo kanya? He thought that it's never going to happen that the loiva is not going to pay up. He thought for sure the loiva is going to pay the chay. If he would have realized the loiva is not going to pay, he would never have obligated himself to Torah Sar. The Gemara has a whole discussion on this topic. So the Gemara raised the question, minolan d'orif mishtabe. Does it say anywhere in Tanakh? So the Gemara first quotes the pasuk by Yehuda, that Yehuda tells the father, Anochi e'arvenu miyodi tevakshenim, lo havi yosef alecha v'chatosu liyovi kol ha'yam. And that pasuk on last week's Sedra. And that's what he says in today's Sedra. He repeats it to Yosef, Gavducho arabes anar, I accepted upon myself orvus. So the Gemara says, maybe you can learn out from that pasuk the institution of orvus. The Gemara has a taina against that it doesn't really make any sense. This is not really orvus. So then the Gemara quotes a different pasuk from Mishlei. It says in the beginning of Mishlei, I think the second and the third per B'niyam arafta l're'echo takaita l'zar kapecho nakashta b'imrei picho. It says it's not a smart thing ever to serve as a cosigner for anybody. I know a fellow who he's married with a few children. At the time he was living in Eretz Yisrael, single, loafing around, learning a little bit here, working a little bit there, switched to another yeshiva, learned a little bit, worked a little bit, and he used to room with a whole bunch of other single guys also floating around. So he didn't realize. So one of these guys borrowed a large sum of money from the bank and he needed a cosigner. So this acquaintance of mine said, okay, I'll be the cosigner. So the guy who borrowed the money from the bank happens to be from a very wealthy American. They were all a bunch of Americans. So he happened to be, the one who borrowed the money was a con man from a prominent wealthy American family. And he never paid back the money, and he came back to America. And then the other guy in between, this guy that I know, got married, and he settled down, and he got a job, and he had one baby and a second baby. And then the bank came to take away all of his money, because he never paid. The other fellow, the loiva, never paid. So they went to the Yorev. So the Yorev started to tainoise the case, and he didn't have so much money. He didn't have $100,000 to pay, so he left Eretz Yisrael. He's still living in America until they straighten out the mess. So that's what Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei. It's a stupid thing. Never agree to be an Orev. B'niyam arafta l'reyecho, takaita l'zar kapecha. If you shook hands to a stranger, that you're going to pay for him. Lo kashta b'imrei picha. You fell in. It's a tragedy. Don't ever agree to be an Orev. If the din is that an Orev is not mishtabek, so what's the problem? So obviously you see from the psukim in Mishlei that an Orev is mishtabek. So the Gemara has a discussion. Why is it so? Why don't you consider it asmachta lo kanya? But we see from the Psukim and Mishlei that an Orev is Mishtabe. How does Gemara think over here that Yehuda was an Orev? What is it? What does that do with an Orev? It's the Haloive, no? He's borrowing Binyamin from the father. If anything, you should call him a Haloive. Why do you call him an Orev? An Orev means if I'll pay instead. On this, today he's an Orev, and by Yigash he's an Orev. He says Binyamin stole a becher from Yosef, so Binyamin has to pay. He has no money, so Yosef wants to keep him as a slave. So he says, well, I'm the Arif, so I'll serve as a slave instead of Binyamin. That's Taken Arif. But that's what he had in mind in the beginning. That's what Yehuda had in mind in the beginning. I'll be the Arif, I'll serve as a slave instead of Binyamin. That's what he had in mind. No, he said, I'll look after Binyamin. So he's a loiva. How is he an Arif? So some girsas in the Gemara have that dechiyah. When the Gemara says, let's learn out from the Pasuk Anochi Arvenu, the institution of Arif, so there are different girsas in the Gemara why they rejected it, why they had to move on to the Pasuk in Mishlei, B'niyam Araf to the Re'echa. So some have the girsa in the Gemara, Yehuda was a loiva, he wasn't an Arif. But others have the girsa in the Shiltas, he quotes the girsa Sagainim, that has a different girsa. No, Yehuda was an Arif, but he was an Arif Kaplan. There's an Arif and there's an Arif Kaplan. An Arif means when I borrow money, so the din is, and then there's a cosigner, so the Mishnah says in the end of Baba Basra, Ein Gaivin Min Arif Tchila. When the Malva comes to collect, first he's supposed to try to collect from the Loiva. In the event that the Bevan ascertains that the Loiva doesn't have assets, doesn't have enough assets to pay, so then Halacha says he can move on to collect from the Arif. But if the Loiva has money, you're not supposed to go from the Arif. Ein Gaivin Min Arif Tchila. You have to first try to collect from the Loiva. Here, according to the Girsa of the Gaonim, Yehuda wasn't a regular Arev, he was an Arev Kablan. Arev Kablan means that the Malva has a right to collect either from the Arev or from the Loiva. That's called an Arev Kablan. There's the third kind of Arev. There's a third kind of Arev that the Arev requests of the Malva, lend the money to the Loiva, and you should only have the right to collect from me, you have no right to collect from the Loiva. That's called an Arev Shlov Dots. We pull out the Loiva from the story, and only the Arev is the Arev is the Loiva. The Loiva is not Mukhayiv at all. So the Girsas HaGainim in the Gemara was that you cannot learn out from Yehuda because Yehuda wasn't a regular Arev. Yehuda was an Arev Kablon. What does it mean? What does it mean? An Arev Kablon. How in the world was he an Arev Kablon? That's a Peladik Girsa. So that's what the Netziv has in his commentary on the Shiltas. He puts together all the different Midrashim. He does that often in interpreting psukim in Tanakh, different place in Tanakh. He'll dig up a Tosefta with a Yerushalmi, with a Medrash, and he'll put everything all together on that pasuk and show how the tradition had an additional level of interpretation in this pasuk. You can't just take a Medrash Chazal on one phrase in the pasuk. You have to take the whole pasuk Bishleimuso and put together all the Midrashim and then try to get a picture of what the additional level of interpretation was. So the Netziv puts together a few Midrashim. So there is one Medrash that Rashi quotes that Yaakov Avinu was afraid to let Binyamin go to Mitzrayim pen yikrenu osam baderach. So the Medrash, the Gemara is bothered with a kasha pen yikrenu osam, an accident can happen. An accident can happen in the house also. Why is he only afraid osam? If he'd say pen yavo shodadim v'yahaguhu, so there are pirates on the highway. They're not pirates at home. But he doesn't say that. He says, Penyikuranosan may get a heart attack. He can get a heart attack in the house. A young man, Binyamin is a young man. Not so young. He has 10 babies already. According to the Medrash, when they met, so he's telling Yosef the names of all of his 10 babies. He wasn't so young, but he was the youngest of all the brothers. Okay. So what is Yaakov Avinu afraid of? An Osan Baderach. He could have been afraid of an Osan Babais. So the Medrash says that Hasata Mikatrik Bishasa Sakana and Kol Adrocha Mecheska Sakana. The Yaakov Avinu was afraid that maybe Binyamin had sinned. Everybody sins. Maybe Binyamin had sinned, and that he will deserve a punishment on Misa B'dei Shamay. And our Satan Mikatreg B'Shasa Sakona. When he's staying at home, it's not a Mokum Sakona. But Derech, when you're traveling, is a Shasa Sakona. That's why we have a Tefillah Saderech, because the person is it's a Tefillah B'yei Tzor. The person is traveling on a road, Chutz L'Yir, and that's a Mokum Sakona. So B'shas HaSakana, the Satan has an opportunity to be Mekatrig more than in Babayas. So the Chazal understood Pen Yikrenu Osan. Osan means a punishment of Misa B'dei Shamayim. Then the Netziv says that's what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara has a din of Kamlei B'dirav Minei. The Psukim have a din of Kamlei B'dirav Minei, that if a person is Mechuyev Misa simultaneously with the Chiyev Mamen, so the Bezin doesn't make him pay the Mamen. What if it's Kores? What if it's not Misa? So then the Gemara has a Machlegs, Amnuchunye Ben Akone, and the other Tanoim. So we paskin like the Mishnah in Bava Kamma. Asar Kedisha Shal Chaver B'Shabbos has come like the Rav Mineh, because Shabbos is Nuschai B'Nafsho. But Asar Kedisha Shal Chaver B'Yom HaKippurim is not come like the Rav Mineh, because Yom Kippur is only Chorus and there's no Misa, and therefore there's no come like the Rav Mineh. And Rav Nechunim Ben Akone is Chaylik on the Mishnah. That's how the Gemara says in Bava Kamma. According to Rav Nechunim Ben Akone, Hoyoi says Yom HaKippurim K'Shabbos. He held that Asar Kedisha Shal Chaver, if I burn down my neighbor's barn on Yom Kippur, it's the same Kamalei with the Rabban as if I would have burned down the barn on Shabbos, because Chorus is also Kamalei with the Rabban. So we don't Paschal like Rav Nechunya ben Akon. So the Gemara in the beginning of Eilu Nairis has a Machlokes Abai v'Rove, what would Rav Nechunya ben Akon say in the case of Misa B'Dei Shamayim? Would he hold that Misa B'Dei Shamayim is the same as Chorus? Or does he only say Kamalei with the Rabban by Chorus? Hayoi says Yom Kippurim K'Shabbos. Yom Kippur is Chorus. What about Misa B'Dei Shamayim? So in this Machlekes Abai v'Rove, the Gemara quotes Psukim to indicate, to support each theory. So the Gemara quotes Psukim to indicate that Misa B'Dei Shamayim should have the same din of Kamalei B'Dei Rabbanei. So the Gemara says, we learn Gzera Shava Osan Osan. Where is the source of Kamalei B'Dei Rabbanei and the Chumash? By the Mei Velodis in Parshas Mishpatim. Ki Inotza Anoshim Anokvi Shohar B'Yotzu Yoladeho. If the woman doesn't get killed, only the Uber got killed, in lo yason, then the one who injured her and caused the baby to die has to pay the mevelodis. The masam yia, then come levi the rabbanim and asatam nevstachas nevish. So the word osan appears in the context in the middle of the parsha of come levi the rabbanim. And then in this sedra it says penya krenu osan baderach. And this is talking about Misa B'Dei Shamayim. So you see that Misa B'Dei Shamayim, Asan Asan, also has the din of Kamalei B'Dei Rabbanei, like Misa and like Koris. According to Rav Nechunya ben Akone, we paskin that there isn't even Kamalei B'Dei Rabbanei on Koris. But on the assumption that you follow Rav Nechunya ben Akone, that Kamalei B'Dei Rabbanei applies to Koris, it applies to Misa B'Dei Shamayim as well. So you see that the Gemara understood like that. Pen Yikrenu Asan Maderech means a Misa B'Dei Shamayim. It doesn't just mean an accident can happen. No, it means that Rasotan the Katrik Bishasas Makona, the Sotan, they come to collect Misa B'Dei Shamayim for some Aveira that Binyamin had violated. That's what Yaakov Avinu was afraid of. Lest the Sotan will come, Bishasas Makona, when people are more susceptible to punishments, and they'll come to collect the Misa B'Dei Shamayim. So that's what Yehuda says to the father, Anochi Erevenu. I'm accepting upon myself that if the Satan should come to take Binyamin's life because of any sins that he had done, and he deserves Misa B'Dei Shamayim, I accept upon myself to be an Orev Kaplan. I'm volunteering that let the Satan take my life instead of Binyamin's. Usually the din is Ein Gozrim in Orev Tchila. You're supposed to first collect from the Loiva. You can't collect from the Loiva, then you collect from the Orev. But here, Yehuda is volunteering, I'll volunteer to become an Orev Kaplan. If the Satan will come to take his life, very strange. Well, what is it going to help? But Binyamin is the one who sinned. Yehuda is not the one who sinned. Why is it going to help? Like the tale of two cities. Well, what do you mean? Why should the Satan agree to take his life if he's not guilty? If Binyamin is the one who's felt guilty, very strange. But that's what the Netziv thinks. That's what the if you put all the Midrashim together, that's what it seems like. So that seems to be the understanding that the Girsus HaGainim had. And the Gemara is dechia that the reason why we are not happy about learning out the principle of Arvus from Yehuda is because this was a stronger Arvus. This was an Arv Kablon. This wasn't the plain Arvus. How do you know there's a normal din of Arvus? That's why the Gemara had to go fish to quote the Psukim in Mishlei. Imarafta l'reyecho. I saw a very interesting idea. It's very interesting. I saw Rav. I just visited Tennessee last week, so I met Rav Nosson Greenblatt, Rabbi Nota Greenblatt. I met him before also, but I met him there. So he has a little sefer on Chumash that I hardly ever look in. So I don't know why. This morning I looked in his sefer. So he has a concept, and then I looked in Rav Nevin's sefer. They both have the exact same idea. The idea is to me very surprising. They both quote the following kasha. There is a machlokes Rabbi Yechanan and Reish Lakish in the end of Sanhedrin that applied in the days of Yeshua ben Nun when they were dividing Eretz Yisrael l'shvatim, where the cholkim irachas l'shvatim, erein cholkim irachas l'shvatim. When you draw the line that serves as the border between one shevet and the other, and there's a city right in the middle over there. Does it make sense to draw the line through the middle of the city? Or do you say, no, you have to draw the line either above the city or below the city. You can't divide one city in two. Once you draw the lines and then you develop the city later, in the United States there are cities like that. There are cities that are on the border. It started off as a little village here, a little village here, then got bigger, bigger, bigger. Then it became one big municipality. It became one big city. So that's not a violation. I'm sure after many years there are many cities that are on the border. But the machlekes that they have is at the time of Chalukah Saaretz in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, and that Chalukah was Nizbatlo Salasi Lova. It says in the end of Yecheskel there'll be another Chalukah, Limos HaMashiach. When they make the new Chalukah, so this machlekes of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish will come up again. With the Cholkim Erachas Lishnei Shvatim, or in Cholkim Erachas Lishnei Shvatim. So the Tosfos Yishonim, and the tiny letters on the side of the Gemara, is bothered with a kasha. How can you have such a machlekes? We know that Yerushalayim was divided between Yehuda and Binyamin, and the border went smack through the middle of the Azara. So how could there be a machlekes of the Cholkim Erachas Lishnei Shvatim or not? We know historically that yes, that that's exactly what they did. So the Tosfos Yishonim answers that Yerushalayim was different. That was a special din. The Pashtus is that Yerushalayim is supposed to represent both the capital of Eretz Yisrael as well as the Mokam HaMikdash. And as the capital, so it has to be in Shevet Yehuda, because Lo Yosu Shevet Yehuda. The government has to be from Shevet Yehuda. So the capital city of Medinas Yisrael should be located somewhere in Shevet Yehuda. So that's why Yerushalayim was chosen. Yerushalayim had to be in Shevet Yehuda. And Yerushalayim was also chosen to be the Makam HaMikdash. That's what we say in Lecha Doidi on Friday night, Mikdash Melech HaMelucha. That Yerushalayim has a double status. It's the Mikdash Melech, it's the Makam HaMikdash, and it's the Yer Melucha, it's the capital, Al-Pidin. It has two different din. So, and the Beis HaMikdash has to be Bechelke Shel Binyam. That's why, that's what it says in Parshas Vayechi. That's what it says in the Zayis HaBracha, when Yaakov Avinu gives the Bracha, so when Moshe Rabbeinu gives the Bracha, so they both say that the Mizbech is going to be Bechel Kishal Binyamin. So the Tosfos Yishonim answers that Yerushalayim was special. That was L'chol HaDeis. It had to be Bedavka, had to be split. It's not that the border happened to pass through the Yerushalayim. It had to be Bedavka like that. Even if the border shouldn't have been there, they had to make it like that, because half of Yerushalayim had to be the Ir Melucha, had to be in Shevet Yehuda, and half of Yerushalayim had to have been in Chel Kishal Binyamin, because Yerushalayim had to be both the Makam HaMikdash and the capital city. So that's what the Tosfos Yishonim answers. Yerushalayim was different. That was the din. It had to be both. So these both Talmid Chachamim Mufakim of our generation, both very big Talmid Chachamim, they both have the same idea. They say that maybe because Yehuda had accepted Orvis for Binyamin, so maybe we treat Yehuda Binyamin as one shevet. Maybe Yehuda Binyamin is an exception to the rule. That's not a violation of Ein Cholkim Erachas L'Shnei Shvatim. They both quote from the psukim in Navi, I think it's in Malachim, where it says that all of the Shvatim are going to revolt against the Rechavim, I think, and only one Shevet is going to stick with him, and then Lemaisa two Shvatim stuck with him, Yehuda and Binyamin. So why does it only say one Shevet? So they both write the same thing based on that pasuk. Maybe they're treated as one Shevet. Since Yehuda became an Orev for Binyamin, and an Orev is like a Taruvis, Lihisarev, to blend in together. So they blended in, they considered one Shevet. I don't know exactly what that means. But I thought it was a little interesting that two outstanding Talmid Chacham of our generation, independently of each other, came up with the same suggestion. When finally Yosef reveals himself to the brothers, V'lo yochol Yosef l'hisapek l'chol anisav m'olov. So he says, Ani Yosef, and he asks again, Ha'id Avichai, is my father still alive? So the Beis HaLevi has a famous essay on this, Ha'id Avichai. They didn't go back to Egypt again. The second time they came to Egypt, so he asked them, is your father still alive? And they said, yes. And then they were about to leave Egypt, and he had the police go chase after them, and he said he hid the cup, and I'm Tachas Binyamin. He said they didn't go back, they didn't have a cell phone. So how did they know whether anything, father was an old man, could be that he died in between, but they wouldn't know whether he died in between. So what is he asking again? He already asked before. So the Torah Tmima says a suggestion that he caught them in a lie now. when they were presenting, when Yehuda was presenting the case, so that he says that one brother died. He said, we used to be 12 brothers, and then one brother died. So he knows that that's a lie. So he saw that they told a lie. He's still alive. Yosef is still alive. So he realized that they're not 100% telling him the truth. So the Torah Tamimah suggests maybe Yosef was choshed them that what they told him, we have an old father. Maybe that was all above mice. Maybe it's all a lie, and they just were interested in having Rahmanis. So maybe that was also a lie. So now that he tells him, I'm Yosef, he asks again, now tell me the truth. Is the father still alive? Is it really true that the father is still alive? That's how the Torah Tamimah suggests. So the Beis HaLevi, who preceded the Torah Tamimah, Beis HaLevi writes that he doesn't think that's the Pshat. He thinks Ha'id Avichai was Tochacha, and he quotes a Medrash to that effect. It's a Medrash Rabbah, and it's a Gemara in the first Perek in Chagiga, that when Yosef gave Tochacha to the brothers, he's only a boss of Adam. So the Pasuk says they were so humiliated, they were nivolo because of Busha. So what's going to be Losid Lava Liyay Madin when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us all Tochacha for all of the averes that we all are guilty of? We're certainly going to be humiliated. We're going to be very embarrassed. So the Beis HaLevi asks, where do you see that Yosef gave any Tochacha? Just as I'm Yosef. He didn't say a word of Tochacha. So that's what he interprets. Ha'od Avichai, that he's asking them, you're so worried about Binyamin, you're afraid the father's going to get a heart attack, the old man is going to get a heart attack. I'm Yosef. Why weren't you worried at that time? Ha'od Avichai, the old man is still alive. He lived through that heart attack. He didn't die then. What happened at that time when you sold me as a slave? Why weren't you afraid that the father's going to die? Ha'od Avichai is not a question. It's not a question. Is my father really still alive? He says, I'm Yosef. Why weren't you worried then that the father's going to die? That this was the tochacha that he gave the brothers. He didn't have to elaborate. He just said, Bikitza, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai. That was the tochacha. So Yosef tells the brothers that they should bring the father because it's going to be 7 years of famine, the whole story. So the father is very concerned about going down to Egypt. So it says he's preparing to go down. He's on his way to go down to Egypt, and then Vayizbach Zvachim Lelekei Aviv Yitzchak. It's a strange Lelekei Aviv Yitzchak. It's the same God of his grandfather also, Lelekei Ho'elam. What's that? It's Lelekei Aviv Yitzchak. So Rashi has a comment on the post. Rashi posts from the Medrash Rabbah. Chayv Adam Mikvod Aviv Yosef Mikvod Avi Aviv Yosef Mikvod Zekeinu. He could have said Lelekei Aviv Avraham. But Avraham Avinu is his grandfather, Yitzchak is his father, so there's a greater chiv kibbutz towards the father than there is towards the grandfather. This is a big machlokes in Yeridei, how to read this medrash that Rashi quotes. Does it mean that there's a greater chiv kibbutz? There is a chiv kibbutz to grandparents, but the chiv kibbutz to parents is stronger than the chiv kibbutz to the grandparents. That's what some achrenim say. And the Rambam says no, it means that there's no chiv kibbutz to grandparents at all. Chai bada mikvoid aviv, yoyse mikvoid avi aviv, means the kenu. There's no chiv kibbutz at all. So Shaila had to read the Pshat in the Medrash. But the whole phrase is so strange. Why does it say Lelekei Aviv Yitzchak? The whole thing is strange. So the Netziv writes an interesting insight. He says that Yitzchak was the one who was an Oilot Mima who wasn't permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael. When there was a famine, the Pasuk said, Vahi Rav Baaretz Milvada Harav HaRishana Shehayah B'mei Avraham. Rashi says on his way to go to Mitzrayim is going to go in the footsteps of Avram Avinu, do the same thing that Avram did. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yitzchak and he says, Al Teret Mitzrayim, Shchom Boretz Hazos, you have to stay here because you're an Ola Tamimi, you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. So that's how the Netziv interprets over here. Yaakov Avinu was on his way to go to Mitzrayim, but he really felt very upset about this. He did want to go to Mitzrayim. So Vayizvach Zvachim Lelekei Aviv Yitzchak, he's offering korbanos to Lekei Yitzchak hoping and praying that the Rabbanu Shlomo tell me also, like he told Yitzchak, don't leave Eretz Yisrael, stay in Eretz Yisrael, and somehow we'll patch the family together, somehow we'll straighten everything out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him no. But Yom Elokim, he's praying to HaKadosh, he gives the korban and he prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how you have in the Gemara in Tainis. The Gemara says that Choni Hamagol was a Tanu who lived in the times of the Bayesheni. The Gemara says he was a big Tanu Chochem. The Gemara says he went to sleep for 70 years. Then it sounds like the Rip of Van Winkle story. He went to sleep for 70 years. Then when he woke up and he came to the Beis Medrash, he was talking and learning. So they said, hey, this guy knows how, this is Lebedik like in the days of Choni Hamagol. So he says, what do you mean like in the days? That's me. I am Choni Hamagol. So they were all laughing at him. They gave him respect because he knew how to talk and learning much better than them. But because they didn't give him the respect that he felt that he was Choni Hamagol. And they said, this is as geschmack as we heard it was in the days. They didn't know. 70 years before, they never saw Choni Hamagol. So he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chavrus al Misus. He said he wanted to die. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his life. He was so aggravated why he didn't have the dignity that he felt that he deserved. People have to have self-dignity. So he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he'd rather die. So that's Choni Hamagol, was a big Tam Chochem. The Gemara says when he spoke in learning, it was a Lebedik Freilich. And for 70 years later, they knew that he used to say, knock out the terrorists, Givaldi get terrorists. So the Gemara says this Choni Hamagol is known as Choni Hamagol because on occasion he used to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rain and to stop the rain, all the mopsim and the Rabbanu Shalom would listen to him. So the Gemara says he lived his mana bayis, bayis sheni, and when he prayed for the rain, he went into the Beis HaMikdash, he bought a carbon and then he davened. So that's, apparently that's the way to do it. We don't have any Beis HaMikdash, so we daven. We say till we daven. If we would have a Beis HaMikdash and we would be praying for something that a great need that we have, the proper Derech Eretz would dictate. You give out a gift to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then you pray, then you offer a prayer. So that's what the Netziv understands over here. That Yaakov wants to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't want to. It's interesting that Beis HaLevi, who was the co-Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, the same time as the Netziv, so the Beis HaLevi writes in his sefer over here, Yaakov Avinu bought the Bechorah from Esav, knowing in advance what it entailed. It entailed that he's going to have to go into Golis Mitzrayim, Kiger Yezarach, Yadoa Teda, Kiger Yezarach, Be'eretz Lo'elohem. And Rashi HaChumash quotes the Medrash that Esav was happy to get rid of it. He didn't want to go into Golis. He didn't want to suffer going into Golis. He says, goodbye and good luck. Whoever goes into Golis is going to get Eretz Yisrael will be the Amma Nifcha. I don't want to go into Golis and I'm a Mevater and Eretz Yisrael I'm a Mevater on the Amma Nifcha. So this was the deal that they were tippling about. So Yankov knew in advance what he's getting himself into. He knew he's going to have to go into Golis. That's exactly why Esav was Mevater on. He didn't want to go into Golis. So what is he nervous now all of a sudden? From years ago he already agreed that he's going to go into Golis. So the Beis HaLevi explains, they didn't know what country it's going to be. So he figured, America, France, how bad could it be? But at that time, Mitzrayim was known as Ervas Haaretz. Means that was the most maneuverable place. All the Toevas, all the terrible things were going on in Mitzrayim. So when it turns out that Yosef is in Mitzrayim, and now it's time to go into Golis Mitzrayim, so he says, Mitzrayim, Rabbi Shlom, give me a break. I agreed to go to Golis. San Francisco, Los Angeles, Toronto, Montreal, but Mitzrayim, that's the worst of the worst. I don't want to go to Mitzrayim. So the Rebbeinu Shlom says, Al tira miridoi Mitzrayim. That's how the Beis HaLevi interprets the pasuk. Don't be worried about going to Mitzrayim. He doesn't say, don't be worried about going to Golis. He knew that he's going to have to go into Golis. That's what he had accepted years before. But now that he found out it's going to have to be Mitzrayim, so he was very concerned about that. He was afraid that there wouldn't be any. When the Klal Yisrael goes into the Erev HaSar, it's the worst place in the world, the most maneuverable place. So he was afraid that we'll never come out intact. We'll never come out as an Am Kodesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, don't worry. There will be a Klal Yisrael. I'm going to be with you. I'll protect the Jewish people. And I'll see to it that when they leave Mitzrayim, they will be intact. There will be a Jewish nation. To the Goy Godol Asim Chasham in Eretz Haaretz, the Jews will develop. It will be something wonderful. They used to say in Europe, go to America, the steiners are in trade, the stones in the street are trade. Everything was trade in America. It was terrible. Now you look in America, the yeshivas all over, there's Torah flourishing, there's unfortunately a lot of shmad also, a lot of other things going on too. But the learning was impossible to imagine this years ago. People couldn't visualize that there would ever be any orthodoxy in America the way it developed now. So that's what Yaakov Avinu was concerned about. So the Netziv interprets also like that. That v'yizbach zvachm lalakei oviv Yitzchak, he offered the korban in order to introduce a tefillah, and his tefillah was, give me a break, Rabbanu Shalom, don't force me to go to Mitzrayim. I'm prepared to go Eretz Ger Yezerach Beretz Lolahem, another country, but not to Eretz Haaretz. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, no, don't worry about it. It has to be Mitzrayim, and it's going to work out well. Beis HaLevi elaborates on this theme of the Pasuk, Anochi Ered Imcha Mitzrayim, of Anochi Alfa Gamalo. This is the concept of Golos HaShchina. So he quotes a lot of psukim from Levim and passages from Amori Chazal, from Midrashim, from Gemaris. That when Bnei Yisrael represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, we are the Yam Hashem and he is Elokei Yisrael. We're sort of married to each other. So when Bnei Yisrael are Bishval HaMadrego, when we are downtrodden and in a state of Bizoyan, so the Jewish God is also in a state of disgrace. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Anochi Ered Imcha Mitzrayim, it will be a Yerida for me. If my people will be in Mitzrayim, there'll be a significant diminishing of Kvod Shamayim, and I'm certainly interested. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lekeinu Shebaranu L'Chvodo, he created the whole world L'Chvodo, he created the Jewish people L'Chvodo. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov Avinu, I will certainly be interested in bringing the Jewish people Nochi Alcho Gamalo, I will bring the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim Gamalo, in order that I should have an Aliyah, in order that there should be a Ribu of Kvod Shamayim in the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Yaakov Avinu that he's always going to see to it that that the Jewish people will survive, and he, because it's for his benefit, it's for his purposes, not just for our purposes. Kvod Shamayim is involved. That's the Pshat Anochi Alcho Gamalo. I will bring the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and Gamalo, this will be an Aliyah, this will be a Ribuy of Kvod Shamayim for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And part of the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Yaakov Avinu was V'yosef yoshis yodo alei necho, your son Yosef will bury you. It's an interesting blessing. On the opening Mishnah in Yesh Nechlem, the Mishnah talks about if someone dies, who yarshins his money? So it says the son yarshins the father and the father yarshins the son. So the Rashbam on Baba Basra has long commentaries on everything. The Rashbam is very, very long. The Rashbam writes on the opening Mishnah that the Mishnah first writes the normal root of Yerusha, that the normal is that a father dies and the son yarshins the father. It's a tragedy when the young people die, when the son dies and the father yarshins the son. So he quotes this pasuk, the Yosef Yoshis Yodo Ali Necha, was a blessing that everything should go in order, that you will die, you will predecease all of your children and they will bury you, and it won't happen Chalila the other way. None of your children will die during your lifetime. Yosef will bury you. Yosef Yoshis Yodo Ali Necha. Yaakov Avinu didn't really want to, that's how the Medrash understands here, that's how the Mefarshim understand. He really didn't want to go to Mitzrayim. He didn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. That's what we say in the Haggadah. Vayered Mitzrayim onos al pi adibra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu insisted that he has to go to Mitzrayim. He didn't really want to go. Didn't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. So Soloveitchik once made a comment on that onos al pi adibur. That is important. We have to be machzik in Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. He wants us all to live in Eretz Yisrael. We're all supposed to, well, none of us are supposed to be, everybody's supposed to be living in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it says in the Gemara. But it's important that it's Eretz Yisrael is, the unity of the Klal Yisrael is more important. So that's why, if Yosef was stuck in Mitzrayim, and he's the Mishnah Lamelech, and he can't leave, he has to run the world. He has to make sure that he's running the Sheva Shnei HaSova and the Sheva Shnei HaRov. So since it was a conflict between the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, uniting Klal Yisrael, and being Machzik in Eretz Yisrael, so although Yaakov Avinu wanted to stay in Eretz, so he didn't want to go down to Yosef, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, Onos Al Pi Adibi, you have to go down. It's more important to have Klal Yisrael united together rather than to have Yishev Eretz Yisrael. If that's the conflict, so the Achdus of Klal Yisrael takes precedence. Rashi has a famous comment on the pasuk. Kol nefesh lebeis Yaakov haboa mitzrayma shivim. There were 70. So the Medrash asked the kasha, there were only 69. Where do you get 70? So Rashi quotes the Medrash that Yocheved was Nolda Bein HaChaimus. What does it mean Bein HaChaimus? The mother was pregnant with Yocheved when she was traveling to Mitzrayim, but she was only born after they came into Egypt. So that's the 70th person. That's one suggestion in the Medrash. Medrash has a few suggestions. Who is the 70th? The Rosh has a famous comment. The Rosh writes in the end of Psachim, he writes a few dinim of Sphira Saima. That's what the Rif has, that's what the Rosh has. So the Rosh says, even though it says in the Pasuk that you count Tisperu Chamishim Yom, it doesn't mean Chamishim Yom. It means you count 49. So why does it say 50? Since it's only one off from the unit of 10, so it says Chamishim, like it says by Malkus, Abayim Yakenu, and you really only give 39 times Malkus. Like it says over here, Kol Nefesh Lebeis Yaakov, Habo Mitzrayim Shivim, even though it's only 69. So you see that's the style of the biblical style of writing is, if it's one off from the unit of 10, so you write 70 and you write 40 and you write 50 even though it's a one-off. That's how the Rosh says, that's how Pipshuto. But the Medrash over here assumes that there's a hidden character over here, there's somebody hidden, there's somebody left to the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's very strange. The Pasuk is written in such a way to allude to some tradition of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Who's the 70th person? There was a 70th person. So the Medrash has different suggestions who it was. So Rashi quotes one version in the Medrash that it's an allusion to Yocheved. Why is she the 70th? Because her mother was pregnant with her when they were traveling, and she was only born after they arrived. That's what it means. Nolda Bein HaChemes doesn't mean she was born as they were stepping over the threshold. It means Bein HaChemes means after they already entered into Mitzrayim. Rashi is quoting the Medrash, visualizing as if Egypt has walls around. Egypt didn't have walls around. But that's called Bein HaChemes. After they already landed in Mitzrayim, then she was born. The other opinions in the Medrash that the 70th person is someone else. There's one opinion in the Medrash that it's Serach Bas Asher. Serach Bas Asher is one of the 69. She's already mentioned. So the Medrash has a whole understanding why she counts twice. A whole fantastic interpretation. But it's Yosef Engel has a whole essay about this, and one of his has a sefer on Kabbalah. He has a whole essay on this. Why did the Chumash write it in such a way? The Medrash understands that the Chumash wrote it in such a way as to allude to some oral tradition as to who the 70th person was. Why didn't they write explicitly who the, if you meant to say like the Medrash understands that there was an additional person, so why wasn't that person written explicitly? Why was the intention of the Torah that this should be left to Torah Shebaal Peh? So you have some explanation of Pi Kabbalah. No, you got to be 40 years old to understand Kabbalah. Rashi quotes another famous Medrash, Yehuda Sholach Lefanov, Lahoris Lefanov Goshna. Why did Yaakov Avinu send Yehuda in advance? The Rashi quotes in the Medrash Agoda, Lesakano Beis Talmud, Shemisham Teitzei Harua. He wanted to establish a yeshiva in advance. Shemisham Teitzei Harua, usually Harua means Psak. Harua means Psak. What they need a yeshiva? But they were religious Jews. They always observed the mitzvah Satar. What do they need all of a sudden now a yeshiva? The Pasha Pshat, when a person moves from one society to another, that's not moving from New York to Miami. It's America as America, come out the same thing. It's not such a major difference. But if you're moving from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim, so all the mitzvahs are for Eretz Yisrael are different, and then you have new dinim, new issues. Everything is going to be different. So you have to establish a base hayroah. Someone has to work on, if you live in changing times, you have to be alert to all the changes. And realize that not that the halach is changing, but the application of the halach has changed. You live in a different society, everything is changing. So that's perhaps Pashup Shat in the Medrash. They're going to have to paskin on all the shinuyim. They won't be able to observe the religion the way they had for so many years in Eretz Canaan, because now they're in Chutz Lorenz. Or it could be an additional understanding of the Medrash is not so much Haruah in the sense of Psak. It could be that Haruah just means to learn, a base Talmud, that they should learn there. That the Gemara in Hazel Neshech quotes that the Tanoi made Gzeris forbidding the Jewish people from having too much business contact with Nochrim. If you deal with Nochrim all the time, so you're going to pick up their attitudes and their hashkafas and their ways of life. So the Chachamim made a lot of gzeris. And then the Gemara says, for one is a Tamach Chacham, he doesn't have to observe any of these gzeris, because the fact that he learns Torah, that will be mechazik him, that he should separate himself from the, he won't become secularized. So perhaps that's an additional kavanah over here, that Yaakov Avinu was afraid that now they wouldn't be able to isolate themselves. As long as they lived in Eretz Canaan, they isolated themselves and they sat, they kept their religion separate from the others. But now they're going to be living in Mitzrayim, so perhaps he established this base Talmud to learn Torah, to be mechazek all of his family members, not to assimilate with the Nochrim. Pasuk says that out of respect for his father, Yosef went specially. Yosef Merakafto Bayal Kras Yisrael Oviv Goshna, and they he appeared to him by Yerailov, by Yipol Al Tzavarov, by Yevkal Tzavarov Ov. And Yosef is kissing his father and he's crying over his father's shoulder. And the father's not crying and not kissing his son. Strange, the father is missing the son for so many years and observing mourning period Avelis for so many years. And now that he finally sees him, he doesn't start crying. So Rashi quotes this famous medrash. Rashi made it famous that Yaakov wasn't crying, he wasn't kissing Yosef because he was busy saying Kriya Shema. So how come Yosef wasn't saying Kriya Shema? Only Yaakov Avinu saying Kriya Shema. And at punkt now he had to say Kriya Shema. He couldn't say before, couldn't say after. Now's just the time to say Kriya Shema. What's now Vasikin is exactly the time to say Kriya Shema, this split second. So that's what was usually the Darshanim all interpreted, that it doesn't mean that that was the Zman of Kriya Shema. If it's the Zman of Kriya Shema, so they're going to make a minion. So they're all going to daven, they're all going to say Kriya Shema. Yosef was also going to say. Means they already davened. They're not going to daven, whatever the story is. It's not the regular Kriya Shema. This was a different Kriya Shema. What was this Kriya Shema that Yaakov Avinu was so overwhelmed with emotion for his son Yosef that he felt that perhaps this would be a pegiyah, a chisaron in his love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah requires of us, v'yahavtu es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, you have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of our heart, b'chol nafshecha b'chol miyodecha, we're supposed to give all of our love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how does anyone ever love other members of the family? How does a person love his spouse? How does one love their children? So the Rishayim say that the Chavim Avavas and others say, or Chassadikim writes also like that, that it's supposed to be, there's not supposed to be an independent love for a spouse or an independent love for children. Some people love the spouses, and when the spouse decides to violate Dina Torah, so they go along, because they love the spouse independently. Let's say the wife decides she's not going to keep Taras HaMishpach anymore, or the husband not going to keep Shabbos anymore, whatever. So if they love their spouse independently of the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they go along and they give up their religion, right? They'd rather than get divorced, they'd rather stay married and give up their religion. Or a lot of people love their children so much, even if their children are Mechalei Shabbos and every day Avodah Zarah and they do all the Averis, their child is into marrying, so they're going to go to the wedding because it's my child, I love my child. What do you mean? How can you love your child? It means that you don't love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're supposed to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol nafshecha b'chol miyodecha, b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol miyodecha. So there is room to love members of the family as part of the love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We love God, and God wants us to raise our children. He wants us to be happily married and to raise our children and to transmit Torah values to the children. So as a chelik of the love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to love family members as well. But it's not supposed to be an independent love. And the minute that there's a conflict between the love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the other loves, So the love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes precedence, because the other love is not supposed to be independent. So that's what the Darshanim in Europe used to say, that on this occasion, Yaakov Avinu was so overwhelmed with emotion, feelings of love towards Yosef, that he realized that he has an independent love for him. It's not as part of his love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he recited Kriya Shema now in order to be mechazik himself in this pasuk of Yahavta as Hashem Elokecha b'chol nafshecha, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol miyodecha. That he should have his love for his son Yosef in proper perspective. It should be as a cheluk of his love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A lot of people are like that. They love their children at all costs, and even if their children are doing improper things, so they'll want everyone else's children to do. Their children walk around like slops, with torn dungarees and with sneakers, and they feel bad why the other people's children dress nicely. So instead of telling your child dress like a mensch, they'll want all the other children to do the same stupidity. Or their child is not so medactic on davening, not so medactic on Shabbos, not so medactic on kashrus. So rather than give musa to their child, so they'll be happy that all the children should do the same. That's terrible. They have an independent love for their child that takes precedence for the love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not supposed to be like that. The only allegiance that one is supposed to have is allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One who has any independent allegiance to any other institution other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Avodah Zarah. This is one of the big drushes that Rav Soloveitchik gave for the Mizrahi, that's printed in the Chamesh Drashot in the collections. He says there are those people, whatever the Medina does, they defend the Medina. He says some of the things the Medina does cannot be defended. He says that's terrible. If you have an allegiance to the Medina that's independent of one's allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what we call Avodah Zarah. So any other independent allegiance other than allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no allegiance to family either. The allegiance to family is as part of the allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's supposed to be part of the love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rav Soloveitchik interpreted the Gemara says, one Tana says in the Gemara that the mitzvah in Sarah Remora never was and never will be. Why did the Torah write this din if it never was and never will be? So Drosh and Kabbal Schar, learn the din, and you get reward for Talmud Torah, for fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. For fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you need another perek than Sarah Remora. The whole perek is only five blood Gemara. And half of the perek is about Yehorek Valyava, it's not even about. So there isn't so much about Ben Sarah Remora, it's just three or four or five Mishnayas. The rest of Shas will keep us busy for a whole lifetime. What do we need? What do we need those couple of Mishnayos about Ben Sarah Mara in order to get more reward? Why didn't Baruch Hashem give us a different mitzvah that could be fulfilled? What does it mean, Drosh Mikabascha? Just sit and learn and you get reward for learning, even though it's a din that'll never happen. So Rav Soloveitchik said, no, he said, it's probably not his idea, probably said it over from others. He said, Drosh Mikabascha means you should learn the lesson of the mitzvah. The lesson is that if you have a child who's rotten, you're supposed to bring him to Bezna and give him Misa. It'll never happen. The Rabbanu Shalom knows it's never going to happen. The parents are never going to bring their child to Bezna to give him Misa. They love their child. But we should have our head screwed on properly that's what it really should be. We should not have an independent love for children so that when it comes in conflict with the love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should love the children. The love for the children should be as part of our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to be an independent love or an independent allegiance. The Chumash tells us that Yosef brought his father Yaakov Avinu to Paro, Vayivorach Yaakov es Paro, and he gave him a blessing. So Rashi quotes from a Medrash, Ma Brocha Bircho, what was the nature of the Brocha that he gave? So he says, the Brocha was Shiyala Hanilus Leraglov. And from that time on, Umi Brichoso Shal Yankev Yelech, Rashi quotes from the Medrash Tanchume, Oya Paro Boel Hanilus, Vuhodo Lekroso, Mashkes Art, and that was the end of the Sheva Shnei Harov. Whenever he wanted, he would go to the Nilus, and the Nilus would flood the Eretz Mitzrayim. So everything was able to grow. So the Mefarshim ask, what do you mean, Ma Bracha Berchot? You should give Ma Bracha, you should be Matzliach, you should have an arichas yamim, no one should revolt, no one should rebel against you. What is the Medrash asking? What bracha he gave him? So Rabbi Fine Zalman Margolius has a commentary, it's called Shem Efraim, he has a commentary on Pirish Rashi ala Torah. So on this Rashi, he quotes what his Elter Zeta wrote in the Bchor Shor on Erevin, that there's another Medrash that says that Paro declared himself as a god. So if he's God, so that was the kasha of the Medrash. Ma brocha bircho le Paro. What shaykh to give God a blessing? If God has everything in the world, so what's this? This is an insult to God. If this crackpot thinks that he's God, how can I possibly give him a blessing? So that's what the Medrash says. No, the whole shtick that he made believe that he was God, that only began Leah Ori Vaniyasi Sini. After Yankiv gave him a blessing that the Nile should rise whenever he goes there. So from that time on, he cracked himself up to be God. Until then, he wasn't God. Until then, how can he put on an act that he's God? But after he gave him this bracha, then it was shaykh to act as if he was God. So that's what the Medrash says. Ma bracha bech, how is it shaykh to give God a blessing? The answer is no. He's the one who gave him the ability to put on this act and to make believe that he was God. That's how the Pasuk says in Yecheskel, I think, Liya Ori Vani Asisini, that Paro said, I made myself and I made the whole world and I made the Or. That's that only that whole story began after the Nilus was Oile Lekrosa. My cousin, Professor Aaron Levine, once commented on the deal that Yosef made with the citizens, that they only have to pay 20% tax. In many countries, they charge much more than 20% tax. So he said that Yosef understood that if he's going to charge too much tax, that the people are not going to be interested in working too hard. When you have a slave society, so the working is very, very slow. They get nothing accomplished because they know that they're not going to gain the revenue for themselves. So why should I work so hard? But if you have a capital, that's the philosophy behind the capitalistic society, that what encourages people to work harder is that they know that if I work harder, I'll get richer. If you get the same salary, let's say here in Yeshiva, you get the same salary, whether you say good shir or bad shir. So why should you work hard? Why should you try to say good shir? So some people have a nachas ruach, they feel good. Other people don't feel good. So what's if you have monetary encouragement, if they would pay you more money, if you would say a better shir, so everyone would strive to say a better shir. So that's why Yosef wasn't interested in taking 80% tax and leaving the people with 20% of their income for themselves. The people are not going to be interested in working hard. So he said all he wants is 20% tax. And they can keep the edge. So that encouraged them to work hard. And that's why the 20% turned out to be much more than the taxes of 20% turned out to be much more than it would have been if it would have been 80%. There is a sefer on Hilchos Pesach on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch that's called the Chok Yankif. Rabbi Yankel Ereisher, he wrote the Tshuva Shev Yankif, other svarim. And then there's a commentary on the Chok Yankif. One of the Achrayim who disagreed with him is called the Chok Yosef. So then someone wrote a sefer attacking the Chok Yosef. So the first attack that they wrote was why he called the sefer Chok Yosef. That in the Chumash, Chok Yosef means for the Galochim, for the ministers of the Avodah Zarah religion. It says, "Vayisimeha, vayosam os Yosef lechok arayam hazeh," that the Kohanim, the priests of the religion of the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, didn't have to pay any taxes. So that was the first Hasoga that they have on the Sefer Chok Yosef. Why they called in the name Chok Yosef? That Hasoga on the Sefer Mogen Avraham also. The Mogen Avraham is a standard commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Again, Avraham is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anochi Mogen Lo. So Mogen Avraham is God. So how does he have the chutzpah to call the Sefer as if he thinks that he's God? So the later Achrenim say, yes, I can call the Sefer Mogen Avraham, I can call the Sefer Chok Yosef. The guy's name was Yosef. He wrote a Sefer. Like he called the Sefer Chok Yosef, because he called the Sefer Chok Yosef. But, and others were upset about this. That was the first Hasoga that they had. Why he called the Sefer, the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish. So they chepid, why did he call it the Chazon Ish? Chazon is only on the Nevi'im. So what did he say? He's implying that he had the Nevu'ah. A Sefer, Chazon Ish. Call the Sefer whatever you want. What was the idea over here? Why did Yosef go for supporting the religion? That he doesn't charge any tax of the clergymen? What was that all about? So some suggest that this was in order to set up for later. He knew that there was going, that Bnei Yisrael were now in Mitzrayim and going to suffer there in Golus, and he wanted the government to respect Shevet Levi, that they should be able to preserve Torah. Shevet Levi is supposed to be the Talmid HaChachamim, Yorim Mishpatech Liyakim Saras Chod Yisrael, etc. Shevet Levi is supposed to preserve. So he put it into the code, he put it into the laws of the land, that you have to respect the clergymen of every religion. So he wasn't really interested in respecting and giving any respect to the clergymen of the Avodah Zarah religion, but he set this system up so that when the time will come later, when they'll be suffering with the Golos, so Shevet Levi shall not have to suffer with the Golos. That's how some of Horshma suggests. Otherwise you don't understand. Why was he supportive of an Avodah Zarah religion? In the Haftarah, the Navi promises that there will be a Beis Hamikdash after there will be Achdus of Bnei Yisrael. We didn't have that in the past. We mentioned that Tosfos Yontif in his commentary on Mishnayos writes that the Apikoros asked them, why do we Orthodox Jews still pray for the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash if the Navi Chagai said, God liyakvod habayis hazeh ha'achron min harishon. He said, Navi Chagai said this is going to be the last Beis Hamikdash. And he was building the second Beis Hamikdash. When that was destroyed, it was goodbye. Goodbye and good luck. So why do we keep on praying for the rebuilding of the third Beis Hamikdash? So the Tosfos Yontif says that in Biblical Hebrew, the word Rishon and the word Achron don't always mean first and last. Sometimes he quotes from Tanakh, sometimes the word Rishon means prior, and the word Achron means latter. They said over here also, he thought that Gomri Yekvod HaBayis HaZeh HaAchron mean that this does mean the last, the final, concluding Beis Hamikdash. It means this second Beis Hamikdash. We mentioned the Zohar. The Zohar interprets on the pasuk Goli Yakvod Habayis Hazeh Hyphen HaAchron. Achron Taki goes on the third Beis Hamikdash, but he was the Navi Chagai was told, like the Navi Zechariah was told. They were all told that the third Beis Hamikdash will be a hemshech of the second. The second will be like a laying of a cornerstone for the third Beis Hamikdash. V'hotzias Eben HaRosha. That the whole period of the second Beis Hamikdash was like a hachana for the third Beis Hamikdash. But how do you know there is going to be a third Beis Hamikdash? So that's because the Nevi'im said that there will come a time that Bnei Yisrael will be in a state of Achdus, and all the Jews will live in Eretz Yisrael. There will be a kibbutz Golias, all the Jews will move. We still don't have it. The majority of the Jews still live in Chutz Lartz. But the Navi promises, Navi says, a time will come that there will be Achdus among Bnei Yisrael. There never was. A time will come that there will be Achdus among Bnei Yisrael. And they will all live in Eretz Yisrael. And we will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. V'nasati is Mikdashi b'salchom li'olam. And then it concludes, B'yos Mikdashi b'salchom li'olam. This will be the Kiddush Hashem. This will be V'anochi alcho gam alo. When the Jewish people will return back to Eretz Yisrael, and the Jewish nation will be respected, so then it will be a ribuy of Kvod Shamay. So that's what the Navi tells us that it's really going to happen. Hard to believe, but it's really going to happen. Okay. I apologize that I have